Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Ha, we're not canceled. Stuff it.
Ha, you one fan, eat it.
Exactly.
You guys have to listen to last week to understand that, but anyway.
Yeah, anyway, so we've talked a lot.
Adam and Eve promo first.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. We gotta
quit jumping the gun here.
We got to do that.
Adam and Eve promo. Go to adamandeve.com. Use the promo code STATIC. You get 50% off of a single item. Free shipping in the United States. Six free DVDs.
Six? Double.
Yes, six free DVDs. A toy for her. A toy for him. And a free mystery gift that you'll both enjoy.
Whee!
All for using the promo code STATIC at adamandeve.com.
Also, hit 1201beyond.com and use the Amazon links. If you're going to do some shopping anyway, we get a little bit of a stipend from that, and we get to see what our fans really enjoy and what they've purchased.
Exactly. And now, last week when I mentioned how people really like our obscure cartoons episodes, and we were like, we're running out of obscure cartoons, people. Jesus. Well, so we thought, maybe obscure TV shows.
There are
live
no,
action, you know?
This is true.
Because there's a lot of ones that, some of which are coming out on DVD, some are not. Some exist only in the bootleg scene, unfortunately.
Which, I wouldn't know anyone involved in the bootleg scene.
I would not either. That is illegal. I believe I had somebody tell me recently, a friend of yours does a show called DVDR Hell. You're his connection, right? It's like, maybe. Shut up.
It's amazing how many times you've occasionally shown me a couple of things that, you know,
a month or so later
will end up on DVDR Hell.
Or the thing I like about my collection is there are things that I own that if I did not watch it and have a copy, I can't verify its existence. It's not listed on the actors' filmographies. It's not listed by the production company. There's no record of it on the internet, but I've got it. I've got TV pilots, and I've got movies that have never been released that I can't prove exist other than I have them. They exist.
What was that crazy? I mean, Brad just did a DVDR Hell a while back on, what was it, Disillusion of a Generation?
Deception of a Generation. Crazy fucking Christians about how the evils of the toy box and the evils of cartoons.
Yes. And if you can find a copy of that, that is probably some of the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Second one?
You got it.
So we're going to talk about some old TV shows. How many of you people remember this from 1983?
Wasn't there a voiceover on that originally?
Originally, no.
I could have sworn there was.
No. So that was, for those that know, Manimal.
Which every single Distorted View listener is going, I know that show.
I'm sure Brad Jones is going, I love that show.
Well, Simon McCorkindale is awesome, and it's tragic that he's no longer with us.
And Melody Anderson, coming off of Flash Gordon, she still can't act.
Nope.
Melody Anderson, I'm sorry, she just has never been an actress, man. I don't know how she kept getting roles in the 80s. She can't act.
But anyway, you know.
But Manimal was a big deal.
Yes.
Big special effects. The pilot episode was very expensive. This was something new for 1983. And yet, the critics savaged the show based on its title. Manimal, that's the stupidest title I've ever heard. This show is not going to be any good. 0 stars.
Yeah. And it's really a shame because it wasn't a bad... Okay, it wasn't a great
show. It wasn't a great show.
It wasn't a great show, but it wasn't a bad show. And, well, we talked about this. The entire fall season of NBC 1983 canceled prior to spring. Every single show.
Yeah, this was right as Brandon Tartikoff was taking over NBC or right before Brandon Tartikoff took over NBC.
That and every single show was pretty much universally panned by
everyone.
Yeah.
But see, Manimal, it got great ratings because of all the negative press surrounding it prior to its airing. Everyone tuned in to see the show.
Yes.
So technically it was a hit.
Hi, people can hear me now. I'm talking to the right side of the microphone.
Idiot.
Okay.
But it was technically a hit. The ratings were great.
Yes.
And wow. It just fell off. 9 episodes.
Nine.
A total of 9 episodes.
Well, that, and it, like you said, it was terribly expensive. This is pre-CG, if you remember the 90s, that morphing technology that computers could do, morphing one photo into another, and Michael Jackson used it on his black and white video and stuff like that. This is pre all of that, and they had to
It was basically done through a series of almost frame to frame dissolves.
Yes.
Which not only is massively time consuming, it ain't cheap at all.
Right.
And which is why you'll notice they always said that Dr. Simon Chase could turn into any animal. Yet he always turned into the same 3 animals.
Yeah.
Because they'd already paid for all the effects. We're not going to do effects to show him turning into the shark.
That's right.
Or just all of a sudden there's a shark fin. That's Dr. Simon Chase, fuckers.
Exactly. You know? Congratulations. You're a shark.
He's a shark now. We're not going to we don't have to show it. We just need to say that there's fucking him now. Now, sticking with Glenn Larson, who created Manimal, a lot of people don't realize this. Remember that terrible 90s series, Nightman?
Yeah, I do.
Nightman. Well, first, play the opening, and let's see if people remember Nightman. I hated this series, but whatever.
I couldn't stand it, but here it is. Okay.
This is terrible.
All right. Fighting crime to the sounds of smooth jazz.
Well, he was a jazz musician, so that was actually part of the show.
I know.
Unfortunately. But Manimal actually came back in an episode of this, still played by Simon McCorkindale. They actually brought Manimal back in the episode aptly titled Manimal. But they actually brought Dr. Simon Chase back. He was traveling through time to stop Jack the Ripper, and Nightman ran into him.
Now, wait a minute. Was there a movie called, I think it was Out of Time, where Jack the
Ripper...
Time After Time, yes.
Yes.
So basically it went, I saw this movie on TV
Except we've
night.
Got the Manimal character. Let's have Manimal chasing Jack the Ripper, who somehow killed Jack the Ripper killed his wife. And they never explained the time travel aspect either. But the Jack the Ripper killed his wife, and he's got a teenage daughter in this who also has Manimal abilities. And the wife is implied to be Melody Anderson's character, but they don't actually say her that is the same name. But I thought, as bad as Nightman was, it was kind of cool to bring Manimal back.
Yes.
And that's not the only Glenn Larson show that had a callback on Nightman.
Okay, who else did?
Well, okay, technically we're wishy-washy. Well, we'll play the opening to Auto Man in a minute, but Auto Man, the Auto Man technology came back in the episode Night Woman.
Oh.
A woman, an assassin, got her back broken, and she got the Auto Man technology used on her, and they used the same video technique for it. So it was another callback to another Glenn Larson show.
Oh.
Okay. So how many of you remember Automan, starring Desi Arnaz Jr.?
Actually, I think we played this before, but still.
We might have.
Okay.
You potted the volume down,
that's right,
stupid.
That's right, I did. I did on YouTube itself.
Hey, you guys get to hear the blooper because Scott's an idiot.
Yes, I am. I'm a fool, and here it is.
Doing what he likes best, fighting crime in the streets. You see, Walter's a policeman. Unfortunately, the chief doesn't want Walter on the streets.
Captain, get back to your cage, boy. Now!
So Walter must fight crime in his own way, in the computer room. That's where he's an expert. Fortunately for me, Walter's advanced knowledge of electronics led him to experiment with what is called a hologram. That's a very fancy word for a three-dimensional picture that, when perfected, can be made to look real, sound real. As a matter of fact, given enough power, it can even be made to feel real. That's kind of what got me into this world. My name is Automan. You must be Walter Nebeker.
How did you know that?
It's on the programming you fed into my system. I must say,
down,
Walter,
please.
You're very good. Very good.
Automan wasn't very good then, and it's not
I
very good
wonderful.
Now. It's basically, hey, we can do Tron for TV.
Yeah, that I was going to say, this was during the height of the first Tron.
Oh, this is right after Tron came out.
Oh, yeah.
Or actually, probably during the hype before Tron came out, before they knew the movie kind of tanked just a little bit, you know? But yeah, this is another forgotten series that, you know, has just kind of been lost, season two.
Oh, okay.
Now, sorry, he's loading up the next one. But now, how many of you, Scott does not remember this next one.
Nope.
Scott, do you remember Man and Machine?
Not
well, obviously
bit.
You don't, but
obviously
how
no.
many of you remember Man and Machine? Where is the fucking open?
I think.
Go down.
Okay, it's in here somewhere.
Oh, you fuckers.
Oh, you're kidding me. It's
Yeah, they don't have it on YouTube? You bastards.
They have the Yancey dedication.
Well, play that. Let's see.
This is about as close as we can get.
Early Yancey Butler, yeah. This is before... Well, she was probably still a drunk, but this is before a big drunk. Nothing coming back, Scott?
Not a thing.
The show also lasted 9 episodes in 91.
However, that is one of the most 90s intros I've seen in a long time.
Oh, just wait. Just wait till we get to the next one. Just wait till we get to the next one. That's the most 90s ever.
Okay. Okay.
Renegade.
Oh, God, I remember Renegade. Thank you.
That's the most 90s of all time. But Man and Machine was interesting. It was set in the far-flung future of 1999. You know, one of those ones setting it less than 10 years into the future, because
yes.
That makes sense. But it wasn't too bad. Yancey Butler plays a robot, which is probably the most unique way to use her lack of acting ability. Make
okay.
her a fucking robot.
Robot.
And she's a robot on this future police force, and she's teamed with a human partner. And, you know, she has to learn about humanity while, you know, solving crimes. And it was interesting, and they actually played with the future world that they lived in a little more than you'd think they would, which was really interesting. It was not a bad show. Wizard Magazine voted it the worst sci-fi series of the 90s. Fuck you, Wizard Magazine. Yeah, you don't exist anymore either, so fuck off.
I was going to say, I don't remember this show at all. I don't think I ever saw it.
I missed it in its initial run. I caught it on Sci-Fi Channel when they reran it in the late 90s, and I went, this is pretty good, actually. What the fuck?
So is there anyone I would know who would have an episode or two on tape?
Like me having all 9? Like, Because I happen to have all nine.
You know, I got to be honest. You are probably one of the greatest television archivists of all time.
Yet
anything
not
prior
legally.
To well, no, but
not the point.
Still,
but you want to talk the most '90s? Play the Renegade open. Holy shit!
I remember this with Lorenzo Lamas.
And you guys got to realize this is done total straight face.
He was a cop and good at his job, but he committed the ultimate sin and testified against other cops gone bad. Cops that tried to kill him, but got the woman he loved instead. Framed for murder, now he prowls the Badlands, an outlaw hunting outlaws, a bounty hunter, a renegade.
A shirtless Lorenzo Lamas right there.
Oh yeah,
the harmonica, the bluesy style. This is the most '90s TV show of all time, Scott. Okay, I think.
Well, anything starring Branscombe Richard
and Kathleen Kinmont. I always love Kathleen Kinmont. I don't know why people say she has a horse face. I think she's really hot.
But there we go. There's Renegade.
Now, Renegade actually, despite its so brutally cliched, they got the woman he loved instead. And at that point, you're almost going, is this a parody?
Yeah, for just a moment. And then you watch the show and you're like, ah, there's beefcake for the girls.
Yeah.
And Lorenzo Lamas.
And he beds a lot of chicks. So there's lots of scantily clad. Because what you guys got to remember is this was a time before cable really started to pick up their own regular series like this.
Right.
First run syndication was beating networks at this time. You had the two Star Treks at that time. You had Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. You had the Sam Raimi shows out there.
Yep.
You had Renegade, Baywatch. You had Baywatch. You had all the ripoffs. You had Pacific Blue. You had all these shows that were just doing monstrous ratings, airing at like 1 a.m. on some local station. And at one point, I think it was in the third season of Renegade, they actually dethroned Baywatch as the highest-rated international program of all time.
They actually
were more popular than Baywatch in Europe. How the fuck does that happen?
Do you know where Renegade is still on the air now?
I'm going to guess somewhere in Europe.
Nope.
Where?
Still on the air now and amazingly popular. Brazil and Venezuela.
They love their Lorenzo Lamas,
maybe? They do. They do. And you can still find it airing today.
Do you know how many seasons Renegade lasted?
Two.
Five.
Five?
Five fucking seasons.
Wow.
Kathleen Kinmont left the show after season four because Kathleen Kinmont was married to Lorenzo Lamas, the star and executive producer. And when she caught him nailing one of the script girls, she wanted out of the show as well as the marriage.
Yes.
So that I can't remember how the hell they wrote her character was named Cheyenne. I can't remember how they wrote Cheyenne out of the show, if she got killed or
There's
not.
There's a 90s name if I've ever heard one.
Oh, no, they actually explained why her and Bashacrombie Richmond are brother and sister in this, despite him being an Indian and her being white European.
Okay.
Her parents were killed in a car accident, and his parents fostered her and then adopted her. So they are brother and sister, and they named her Cheyenne, and she's got an Indian name. And I'm like, okay, you know what? I accept that as why this clear white girl is got, you know, Indian philosophy and all that. You know what? I'm okay with that.
For those of you that don't remember
Bashacrombie Richmond.
Thank you. Yes. Abercrombie and Fitchmond. For those of you that don't remember him, any time in the 90s that you needed a wise yet badass Native American, that was him. You had the wise Native American that had a good sense of humor that did Dances with Wolves and read the Red Green Show, and I can't remember his name to save my life. But so he was like the wise cracking and yet wise gentle Native American. Abercrombie and Fitchman was the ass-kicking Indian.
Yeah.
So there you go.
He was the 90s go-to.
Yes.
But yeah, Renegade...
Kind of like Danny Trejo today when you need a badass Mexican.
But Renegade, it's not that bad, and it has a lot of early roles by now famous fucking actors.
Like who?
Like Walton Goggins from Justified and Predators and that, and The Shield. He was in an early episode. Jackie Earle Haley, the Freddy Krueger and Rorschach from Watchmen, he was in an episode. He was playing a long-haired biker and shit.
Oh, yes.
There was a lot of recognizable people before they were recognizable. And I don't know how true this is, but Sean Ryan, creator of The Shield, is said to have been a script supervisor on this series. He's never confirmed nor denied that.
Hmm.
So you kind of even got some Shield in there, which is kind of strange. Now, the next one, you know me, this is my all-time favorite TV show ever.
This was a staple that me and my friend Darren, growing up, we used to go, his dad owned a print
what
shop.
What staple? It only lasted 14 fucking episodes, only 13 of which aired.
I know, but this is one, it became a tradition. And the reason it became a tradition, my friend Darren's dad owned a print shop. So we would go there on the weekends, and we would listen to Dr. Demento on the radio.
Dr. Demento!
While playing Commodore. I mean, you want to talk about... This
an 80s time capsule?
This is the most 80s weekend we could possibly have. We're in an old print shop that printed things like balloons and newspapers and everything that you could print on. He printed on it. While he was working, we were playing games on a Commodore 64, listening to Dr. Demento on the radio. After we finished playing games on the Commodore 64, we would watch this on VHS and any like Bigfoot rally and monster trucks and stuff, which he was really into. So it was the most 80s weekend you can imagine.
Play the open, the second one.
Second one, got it.
Oh, favorite TV show of all time.
This is Max Headroom.
You know I love this series.
Oh, yeah.
Now, even just in that opening, what do you think the budget for an episode was? I mean, they had to create an entire dystopian world. Look at that beautiful model work of the pan through that fake city, all the miniatures.
Let's see here. In 80s money?
In 1987, because this is the American series. So
$120,000 an episode.
Million.
$120 million?
Don't be stupid.
$1 million.
$1 million an episode.
Wow. Holy crap.
And ABC and they kept complaining they didn't have enough money to do everything that the scripts envisioned. That's how visionary the scripts were above what you could do on TV. That they basically wanted to shoot a fucking movie.
Oh yeah.
Every week.
Oh yeah.
But now Max Headroom has kind of a convoluted history. So I don't know how much of it you know and how much of it you don't, Scott.
Well, fill me in.
All right. Max Headroom is not actually an American creation. He is actually British. He was created... They didn't have MTV in England.
Well, that's why his name is Max Headroom and not...
Right.
Yeah.
But, okay, he was created in England. They did not have MTV over there.
Right.
So they wanted to start a music video program, but they thought, let's be real... You know, this is like 85 that they're coming up with this. Let's be real edgy, and we'll create a computer-generated host. Obviously, computers could not do that at that time.
Right.
No matter how much processing power you had, you could not do that on what they had at the time.
Right.
So they said, why don't we fake it? guys, there's not a single computer-generated image in that show. All the Max Headroom stuff that they claimed was done on an Amiga
hand
wasn't
animated.
No, that's Matt Frewer in makeup in front of an animated background.
Oh, okay.
That's actually Matt Frewer in makeup, and they faked the entire CG part of it brilliantly to the point where even by today's standards, you're hard-pressed to tell that that's Matt Frewer in makeup.
Well, no, I mean, like, the... There is a couple of, like, a few, very few shots, not of Max himself, but like the creation of Max.
Oh, yeah, the wireframe stuff. Yeah. But so what happened is they wanted this video DJ, and then they thought, well, before we bring Max on, why don't we explain how Max came into creation? So they said, make a pilot movie, you know, an hour-long pilot movie. And remember, in England, an hour actually means an hour.
Right.
Because, you know, it was no commercials for, I think, Channel 4 had him. And so they said, create a pilot movie. They went balls to the fucking wall and created this dystopian future where television ruled everything and Max was the last voice and all this, and it was just brilliant. And they couldn't get all the financing that they needed. The BBC would only put up so much money. And they said, we cannot do our script on this. So they went to an American backer. And we got to remember, HBO owns Cinemax. Cinemax said, all right, we'll give you half the money for this if we get broadcast rights for Cinemax to air this and you shoot additional scenes because we need it to be 90 minutes in length.
There you go.
So Cinemax paid for half of it. So it aired in England in the hour-long version, and then the American 90-minute version aired on Cinemax, and it was a huge hit. And then ABC, which was trailing way behind, they were way behind everybody else at that point. They were willing to take a chance on anything. They decided to turn it into an American show. They basically reshot the pilot for the pilot movie for the American pilot, and the show lasted 6 episodes in its first season. And then it only aired 7 episodes in its second season with 1 episode left unaired until the Sci-Fi Channel ran that in the 90s.
So only 14 in?
Only 14 total, unless you count the British pilot being a 15th kind of alternate pilot.
Okay.
If you count the British episode.
But still, a great show.
And it bit the hand that fed it too many times. That's why it wasn't canceled for low ratings. It bit the hand that fed it. They kept taking pot shots at ABC and ABC executives in their world. And it was, you know what? You've done this enough times. You're done. They actually stopped them in the middle of an episode. In the middle of an episode, they canceled them. So there's footage that's been shot for the unaired 15th episode that was never finished.
Wow.
It was called Theora's Tale. You can read the script online. And the funny thing is, okay, what a fucking pedigree. You've got a British, it's an American version of a British TV movie that stars 3 Canadians. How fucking, what the hell kind of pedigree is that, you know?
European.
You know, it's just kind of, okay, we're going to bring this show to America from England and we're going to cast it with Canadians because why not?
Now, there is a show that I want to mention real quick because it's another 80s, early 90s staple of mine that I enjoyed the hell out of that's kind of obscure now.
Shoot.
Aired on MTV. It was a game show. Remote Control.
Oh, my God. I watched some of those again, like, last year.
They're unwatchable.
They're fucking... the humor is so bad, and just the jokes and the questions, and my God, I watched that all the time as a kid, and it's fucking terrible!
Yes. Yeah, but I have no idea why Max Headroom made me think of Remote Control, but it did. And so there you go. Yeah, but I caught an episode of Remote Control on some MTV retrospective that aired on VH1 Classic. I don't
get
it either.
Because that
makes sense. Makes sense to me.
Yeah, because MTV's 30th anniversary was aired on VH1 because MTV doesn't care a shit anymore.
That's right. But I was watching this MTV, and they were talking about Remote Control and how it was the launch of Adam Sandler's career. Sorry. Ken Ober.
Who nobody knows today.
Nobody knows today. And there were
for
a couple
a while,
other...
though, it was the highest rated show. Original program. It was the first original program that MTV had,
right.
But it was also, even since it lasted, I think 4 years on MTV and another two or three in first run syndication. Yep. So it was really highly rated.
Yep. But you had remote control and liquid television and that whole block of
I've got all the liquid television on tape too, by the way, if you are interested.
I am.
It's like I have all those on tape.
I am.
But Max Headroom, shockingly original series. The bullshit that they call out about TV today, you got to realize they did this in 87. That's how fucking original they were, man. It's shocking. Just shocking.
Yes. Now, this show I barely remember, but I do enjoy. I remember enjoying it. I think I caught three or four episodes, and that was about
it. Of the maybe 10 that aired.
Yeah, and that was about it, but I enjoyed it at first.
Okay.
And it's Misfits of Science is what it is.
Those misfits, misfits of science, ha, ha. Those wild and crazy scientific guys, I love them. Yeah, those.
Is that logo 80s enough?
Yes.
Oh, Kevin Peter Hall. I'm not sure if Courtney Cox wants this left on her resume or not.
And that's what happened to the dad from ALF.
This is pre-ALF.
Oh, is this pre-ALF?
This is pre-ALF.
So what the hell happened to Max Wright after ALF?
He was blowing dudes in alleys for rent. I'm not joking.
Wow.
He became a crackhead and was like sucking dudes off for money to eat with.
Wow.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, Misfits of Science, if you haven't guessed, it was basically...
X-Men. It was basically the X-Men.
The X-Men, you know, something goes terribly wrong in the lab. Fantastic Four, X-Men,
yeah,
crossover.
One guy is able to throw electricity. Kevin Peter Hall is able to either get really big or really small. You've got the super fast guy. Courtney Cox can move stuff with her mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got a normal guy that's with them. That's kind of their controller. And then a reporter stumbles upon him and she joins the group. And it was the X-Men. It was the X-Men. I mean, the creators outright, they tried to get the rights to the X-Men to turn them into a TV series, and they didn't. So they said, fuck that, we're doing it anyway.
Yep, and
we'll just change it a little bit.
It is amazingly 80s.
I mean, it is.
Right up there with Miami Vice, just amazingly 80s.
You know what? I've been watching a bunch of Vices again lately. There's some really fucking good episodes in Vice, man.
You know what? I caught a couple episodes in the new Miami Vice. It's really terrible.
There isn't a new Miami Vice. There was that new movie that came out a couple
there was
of years
the new,
ago.
No, there's a new Miami Vice
no,
series.
Not. No, there isn't.
Then what am I thinking? Oh, I'm thinking of Hawaii 5-0.
Yeah, I'm like, there's not. I guarantee I will stand up to you because you are fucking wrong.
You're right. I was thinking Hawaii 5-0.
Hawaii 5-0 is fucking terrible.
Yes, it is.
That's god awful. But no, Misfits of Science, it was goofy. The thing that made Misfits of Science
work. It was very Scooby-Doo, yeah.
It did not take itself seriously at all.
No.
It knew exactly what kind of series it was. It said, okay, we're not going to try and make a realistic plot. We got people that can throw electricity and move shit with their minds. Physics are not an obstacle in our scripts here, people. You know?
Yeah, they took, ironically, science and threw it out the window.
Yeah, and you know what? If you can catch it anywhere, because it's not out on DVD... It's a pretty fun series, actually.
I think there might be an episode or two on YouTube.
Actually, they might have put out one of those manufacturer-on-demand things where the series might actually be out there on one of those MOD things.
Huh. Okay.
I saw a review of it recently, or it might be a foreign version. It might be a foreign country.
For our British listeners, we are not speaking of the Ministry of Defense.
or the 80s hardcore band Method of Destruction.
There we go, yeah.
Yeah, manufacture on demand.
Yes. And I, like I said, I remember enjoying it. And speaking of, okay, like the quintessential obscure TV of the 80s, Misfits of Science Fits. Quintessential obscure TV of the 90s that I've started to hear some references to.
Really? References to this? Because I know what you're going to play.
No, not this. Not what I'm going to play. This is another one that I don't have the intro to. Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
I hated that show. I fucking hate that show. Ugh.
I mean, well, tell me, because I remember that he had a coat that did many, many things and wore wacky, wacky shirts, and that's about it. So tell me, why do you hate it so much?
The characters are so smug. And, okay, it's that, remember when I talked about how after rewatching Animal House as an adult, I'm now siding against the Delta House? Well, that's the same way I am here. All Parker Lewis wants to do is fuck up everybody else's educational experience so they can't learn because I want to have fun. And I'm like, you know what? You are a fucking future convict, kid. It's like, I'm sorry, as an adult, I fucking hate this kid.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to go back and take a look at it because, yeah, you might be right.
You know, it's like, ah!
I might be crazy, but it might just be a lunatic you're looking for.
Play the VIP Open.
Oh, okay, I'll play the VIP Open.
I did never watch this, but I caught one now and then. I never watched it regularly, but yeah, oh, me. God.
The beautiful and lethal Valerie Irons. Plucked from obscurity to head an elite Los Angeles bodyguard agency. They know how to get things done.
This is like a Playboy TV video, eventually. My God. God, this is so bad, man.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know who fucking had the idea. Pamela Anderson can be an action star. No, she can't.
They obviously hadn't seen Barbed... Wait, this is prior to Barbed Wire.
This is pre-Barbed Wire.
Because she was Pamela Anderson Lee.
Yeah.
Or Pamela Lee, one of the two, yeah. In Barbed Wire.
Dustin Nguyen, you left 21 Jump Street for this?
Dustin Nguyen.
Whatever.
Yeah, it took me a while to learn to pronounce that last name, too. It's Wynn.
Okay. God, this is almost as 90s as Renegade.
Oh,
not
yeah.
Quite, but almost.
Oh, yeah.
Now, go to the first one that you have loaded up there.
Okay.
This is the most 90s...
What?
Well, I don't know if it's the... Go down.
Me.
Right there.
Okay, yay.
This is almost as 90s as Renegade.
Okay.
And I love this show. It's my favorite all-time TV series.
I hate it with a passion.
How much do you remember?
Lots.
Come on, you guys know it yet?
Again, fighting crime with the power of smooth jazz.
It was a 90s thing, man.
Except this was supernatural smooth jazz.
Only in season 2. This is Baywatch Nights, for those of you that don't know. I'm sure Angie Harmon leaves this off her resume.
The mystical saxophone.
The nights will never be the same.
I know.
I love this show. It is everything
horrible.
That... It's like watching a drive-in movie every week. And come on, Scott. You got to give them... Just pot it down. Scott, you got to give them... You got to give them a little bit of respect for the balls.
No.
That we're going to have Mitch Buchanan as a lifeguard regularly. He's also a private detective and a supernatural investigator in the same continuity.
I know.
That's kind of ballsy.
When did he sleep?
Exactly. Dude, in one episode of season 2, he brought down the Illuminati.
I know.
He punched Satan in the face. How do you not love this show?
It's terrible. That's just like VIP. Terrible. Just... Renegade. Okay, we were talking about Renegade. One of the big things about Renegade was the fight coordination.
You mean lack thereof?
I love the fact that Lorenzo Lamas can kick me from 3 feet away from my head.
See, he compresses the air in front of his foot. Uh-huh. So then that way it knocks you over. Oh, okay, fine.
Shut up.
Fine, be that way.
God, this show is terrible.
All right. What about, do you remember Dark Justice?
Not at all.
All right. Play the open there.
Wait, that's Divergent. That's German. I can't do that one.
All right. Let's see. Then they might not have the...
I don't think they have the actual TV intro, so let's just go with the theme song. This was a CBS series. Yeah,
Crime Time after Prime Time. Dark Justice was... We can't get the rights to the Punisher. It's a judge who is sick of seeing people let off on technicalities, so by day, he's a judge. By night, he's a vigilante, and he meets out Dark Justice!
See,
again, this thing lasted 4 seasons, Scott!
And again, we're hearing a mix of smooth jazz and classical, like almost Gregorian.
Almost Conan-ish.
Yeah.
But yeah, Dark Justice. You don't remember this at all?
No. But again, it was the power of smooth jazz to fight crime. I have no idea what in the 90s.
It was the 90s. I don't know what to tell you. Okay, now this, I've talked about this show at length, season 2. Just watch this opening and tell me that this does not draw you in to go, I want to see more of this world. Because season 1, just eh. Season 2, fucking great. Again, great model.
Oh, yeah. The series well, because it was my Saturday nights, if I was able to stay up really late, like if my parents were out of town, then it was this Friday the 13th, the series, and Freddy's Nightmares.
Aha.
All kind of in a block, and I loved it because it was TV I wasn't supposed to see. You know?
Yeah, because War of the Worlds, the series, was gory as hell for 1988 television.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, this Freddy's Nightmares was gory as all get
That's
out.
Very sexualized, too. Yes. There was a lot. They had side boob in that. You didn't get to do side boob on normal TV.
Yeah, that's my side boob. Anyway.
But I love War of the Worlds, the series. Season 1, okay. Season 2, fucking loved it. The two seasons don't match up whatsoever.
No, no. They kind of took the continuity from Season 1 and went, pfft.
Yeah. But Season 2, I liked the world it took place in. They really had this post-economic collapse United States, and I really enjoyed that.
You like the dystopian future stuff, because you...
It's interesting.
Yeah. You turned me on to Southland Tales and whatnot, which is very dystopian. What was the other, the 1999 movie with the replay of the brain in the head and the...
Replay of the brain in the head?
No, the little discs where you could relive experiences.
Strange Days?
Strange Days.
From 1995,
another,
actually.
Yeah, another. Well, it took place in 1999.
Yeah.
So yeah, another dystopian future.
Well, since we're running out of time... Play the one that's still up there. Oh, over one more. Yep.
That one right there, yeah.
Now, the theme song might kind of throw you off, but this was one of the most groundbreaking production-wise series of the 80s.
Oh yeah.
It's right up there with Max Headroom for how groundbreaking the production was.
I remember this one too.
Through the mirror of my mind, time after time, I see reflections of you and me. Reflections of the way life used to be. Reflections of the love you took from me. Oh, as I peer through the window of lost time, looking over my yesterday.
Pre-CSI, Mark.
Way pre-CSI.
Oh, yeah.
Hot as hell fucking Dana Delaney, though.
Yes.
Pre-Star Trek, Robert Picardo.
Yep. Who played the Doctor, for those that don't know the name.
Conchita Tomei from Max Headroom.
Yep.
Now, we're talking about China Beach.
Yes, which the audio does not match the video at all. That nice little jaunty 60s.
But very much, this is, you know, it takes place during Vietnam. And the thing about China Beach was that set it so apart. It was the first real, we're going to bring a feature film feel to a TV series. I mean, you had movie actors who would never do TV that did China Beach episodes. You had movie directors doing episodes of this. But they
Wait a minute. They of course, one of the most famous things that you can see from China Beach and Miss Saigon, the musical, was the helicopter against the sunset.
Yeah.
Was Michael Bay involved in this at all?
Okay. No, he wasn't. But China Beach was just... They were, for I guess maybe because they put it in a historical context, they were able to do things you could not do on TV. I mean, Marg Helgenberger plays not only a sympathetic prostitute who is open about her prostitution, she's a drug addict as well.
Yep.
This is 1987 television network. You can't do that.
I even remember news stories, because my dad had friends that were affected in this way. China Beach was actually either loved or hated by Vietnam veterans. And the reason it was hated by quite a few of them was it caused flashbacks.
Yeah, because, well, first of all, it was violent as hell. It also had that just because you're in the opening credits don't mean you're safe. We're
That's
in
right.
fucking war.
That's right.
They killed main characters with no foreshadowing or whatnot. You know, just you're on this scouting mission for the 800th time you've done it. You stepped on a landmine, main character's gone.
And it was one of the first series to do that, too.
Yeah, that just because you're in the credits, you aren't safe. But it also experimented with the format of television. You know how Seinfeld got all that credit for, oh my God, we did an episode backwards. We started at the end and worked to the beginning. China Beach did it 3 years earlier.
Yep.
They did the episode which involved Ricky Lake's character's back alley abortion going wrong. Another touchy subject right there.
Yep.
But then the fact that it was a complete backwards episode as well. First time they did that. And they also, the fourth season, really broke out of what people were expecting. Because they knew it was going to be their final season, okay? The fourth season took place in 1983 with the surviving characters back in the world after Vietnam. And then they would see something in the regular world that would trigger a flashback. So you'd have some scenes set in Nam, some scenes set in 1983 America, all interspersed with interviews from actual Vietnam veterans that were basically these, you know, like a nurse or whatnot, that these stories were based on.
Many of which were consultants to the show throughout its run.
That had never been done. That was completely unique. And they tried that for the fourth season. And the series finale, I heard many Nam veterans couldn't make it through the series finale.
Right.
Because the series finale actually has old woman Dana Delaney in then current, you know, concurrent 1992 or whenever, I think 91 maybe, visiting the Vietnam memorial wall, and the in the episode is, you know, bringing the characters when they come back to the world, and it's all interspersed with real interviews with vets as well as the cast members dropping their characters and talking about what it was like. And it was one of those, holy fuck, this was an emotional 2-hour fucking finale, man, for a show that was never highly rated. The show never broke the top 20 once.
No. And it's a shame because it's a great show.
But it's also surprising it made 4 fucking seasons with those kind of ratings. I think ABC, again, they were at the rock bottom that they needed the cred. It gave them Emmy cred. They got Emmy cred out of China Beach.
Yes.
And the real shame about China Beach is, and maybe they can pull a Miami Vice on this, because of all the music rights, because of all the songs that they used, they basically said, you're probably never going to see this on DVD.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they had to change all the music when it aired on the History Channel. History Channel aired this, and they had to remove almost all the rock music. Yes. And the episodes really don't work the same because they're edited to these 60s and 70s songs.
Right. And China Beach was a lot of people, you know, they point to Buffy the Vampire Slayer in their first musical episode of the actor
China
singing.
Beach did that first, too.
China Beach, they didn't do exactly a musical episode of the actor singing or anything like that, but they did multiple episodes where the music and the lyrics of the music
told the story
and played an integral part. So if you take that music out of this series, it really, really hurts it.
Yeah, you can find the 2-hour pilot with all the music included. I guess they must have cleared it because since it was a 2-hour episode, what they usually did is they usually released those theatrically over in Europe. So I'm sure they cleared the music right then and there. You can find that on VHS. You can find the 2-hour pilot on VHS. Otherwise, you got to find bootlegs of the series from people like me who have them all on tape when they first aired on ABC. So you can find all the episodes like that. But China Beach is one that you've got to find. Same thing with Tour of Duty, its competitor on CBS. Also very original. I mean, not, you know, it's a NAMM show. But how it happened, not the DVDs. Every single bit of music is missing.
Yeah.
And the episodes have no power whatsoever.
None.
The DVDs. You got to find bootlegs of Tour of Duty as well.
Yeah. And Tour of Duty was a little bit more violent.
Because Tour of Duty was the frontline people.
Yeah.
China Beach was what happens after the frontline.
Right.
They were the doctors. They were the rehab people. They were the psychologists. They were dealing with... It was kind of like if the shows were on the same network, Tour of Duty would be part one, China Beach would be part two of each episode. You know.
And you can think of China Beach. China Beach, a lot of people, when it did air, they compared it to MASH because that's what they were expecting. They were expecting a MASH, a comedy.
But this show was
set
hard.
In Vietnam.
This was a hard show for 87, man.
This was hard. And I got to be honest, the series was a little bit beyond me at the time.
My dad was a NAMM nut, you know, so I grew up watching Tour of Duty in China Beach with my dad. So.
And my dad was not.
So yeah. I grew up watching these, but China Beach is one of those forgotten shows that, and like I said, it burns my ass when I hear about Seinfeld, so original, they did all this stuff. Oh, Buffy, so original, they're breaking the ground boundaries of TV. Go watch China Beach, that show nobody's ever heard of, that did it first.
Yeah, it's
you know that bugs me.
It's worth seeing. Now, we've got the big project coming up, and I don't know if we're going to start it next week or the week after, but all other episodes coming up that I want to talk about, I would like to talk about kids sitcoms.
Kid coms.
The stuff that was on Nickelodeon, Clarissa Explains It
like
All.
Like we talked about last
Pete
week.
And Pete and stuff like that, which we mentioned
and
last
see,
week.
That's going to be a mostly you episode because mm-hmm. I never got into, even when I was a kid, I did not get into those. So.
And I did.
So I'll that's going to be a lot of you talking and me going, I flipped past it, going flipping channels, but...
To be honest, Clarissa Explains It All. That was where my crush on Melissa Joan Hart started, and it ended recently. But that's another story.
She became a liposuction nightmare.
Yeah, partially. I'd like to talk about that. I would also like to talk to you about some of the more obscure sitcoms out there because
I've got a bunch to talk about with that shit. Yeah,
and I'm not. We've talked about unaired pilots and stuff like that, but I'm talking about the stuff that aired that maybe people don't quite remember.
I'd like to do a spinoff episode. I'd like to do an episode on spinoffs. spinoff TV shows and how sometimes people don't even realize that the main show that they loved was a spinoff of another show.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about that a
little bit. But not spinoffs in particular. Because sometimes a lot of people don't realize a lot of shows have
nonetheless, thanks
that
a
didn't,
lot for joining us, guys. We are out of time. We will see you next week.